The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi there, I'm Marcus Ashworth. I'm the Chief Markets Strategist at Haitong Securities. And I have the great privilege of having Anthony Hilton here from the London Evening Standard. He's well known indeed within the city and has been feted throughout business circles for many, many years. But you know, having met Anthony many times now and had fierce and very intelligent, enjoyable debates with him, he has a very clear view, I think, expressed for the reasons why we stay in the European Union. And so I thought I'd take the opportunity today to have a brief chat with you and highlight the reasons for why we think it's more sensible to stay in, and perhaps, you know, illustrate against one of the reasons why it might be more sensible to leave. But I mean, we were mentioning earlier what I think is the three sort of tenets of the debate, which is the economic argument, which we can go into, and equally the political aspect. It's very easy to say, okay, we want to be free of the European Union, free of rules and regs, but perhaps majority of the reasons, or vast majority of the reasons, are our own British civil service and our own adherence to doing things by the book. And thirdly, perhaps the swing factor of migration, which may actually decide that sort of probably Northern voter or Labour voter, which may or may not be inclined to, or younger voter, to come out of the polls, and we see whether Jeremy Corbyn decides to get his act together and actually back staying in rather than just mealy mouth talking about it. So perhaps we should start, you know, seeing as you're the sort of business and city expert, on the view why you think it makes more sense for Britain to stay in the European Union.
I think my starting point is that I can't see what advantages we would get from leaving which we don't get from being in. You know, the Brexit case, that we could trade with the rest of the world because the growth is in Asia and South America more than in Europe, may be valid, but we could trade with those countries where we are. After all, Germany has as its biggest trading partner, not France, not the UK, but China. Yeah. It doesn't seem to stop them, so why should it stop us? We don't have to leave to trade with the new world. The narrow argument that we could form trade deals with these new countries is, I think, a bit sort of silly, because A, most of our exports are services and they are not covered by trade deals. But the second is that the Brexit case is that we would be an open nation without tariff walls. So in that case, we have nothing to trade away.
No, indeed. I mean, someone said the other day that if you don't like the European Union, you're going to hate TTIP, and the other one, which is coming in Asia, is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Everyone's moving to blocks.
Quite.
And that is something which is outside our control. I mean, sure, we have the Commonwealth, but as you said, I mean, how relevant? India is a very domestic economy. It's breaking through.
And the Commonwealth, you know, I mean, people talk about trading with the Commonwealth, but apart from India and Pakistan, it's not that populous. It's either the, as it were, the Canada and Australia, where we have agreements anyway, or deals anyway, or it's a vast part of the world that actually have no particular desire to do deals with us.
But do you think there'll be a huge economic cost if we left? Is it Armageddon, or is everyone overstating it, both the people keep on stay in, and equally the people perhaps that are arguing to the Brexiteers that, you know, that we're perfectly fine and piffle and poppycock that it'll make any difference at all?
I mean, being honest, I mean, who knows? Economists can't say what's going to happen next week, let alone what's going to happen in 3 years' time. But I think that the key worry for me is uncertainty. It's not that once one is properly out, then I dare say that the economy will adjust. But getting there, I think, is going to be very difficult. And I think the whole process of separation and what is put in its place and so on could take years. I mean, we don't know. And in that time, all sorts of damage is going to be done because everybody hates uncertainty.
Yeah, I think particularly without a favorable American president, you know, perhaps leaving us or offering us a NAFTA or something else, it does have that uncertainty thing.
But why would you leave the EU to go into a NAFTA?
Well, I mean, you could argue that there are benefits, but you know, a lot either way. But I mean, the one thing I wouldn't mind asking you is that it's all well and good. Everyone argues that the nightmare scenario of leaving and trying to rearrange trade treaties or whatever it may not be. But what are the benefits of actually staying in? Will we get, having, let's say we do vote to stay in, will we get a better deal around the European Union? Will they treat us with more respect? Will we get some benefits? And I appreciate there's some advantages on innovation and science and technology and various things like that by being part of a 500 million, you know, marketplace. But do you think there's any particular reason, or are you more worried about the fear of going out or the potential nightmares of leaving? Or are there any obvious upsides for staying in?
First of all, I think we actually do extremely well in the European Union. That studies of, as it were, regulatory initiatives show that the Brits have got their way in well over half of all the things they've ever objected to going back over 20 years. There's a big myth around this. But I ultimately would like the debate to move away from economics and you know, a better deal to a conceptual thing about, you know, what kind of world do we want to live in? And I'm a great believer in
a perfect segue. Almost like you've done this before, Anthony. I mean, like, what a wonderful thing. So I was about to say, right, and let's go on to the politics aspect, which is far more emotional. And I think really either you have this sort of hatred of rules and straight bananas or whatever it is that Boris, you know, leads us to.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think politically that we'll be any freer if we were to leave, or are we tied into this? It seems that the argument goes down to both the European Convention on Human Rights and particularly the European Court of Justice as being the things that egregiously offend the Brexiteers.
Well, the Convention of Human Rights, of course, has nothing to do with the EU. The Convention of Human Rights was written in 1950 out of the ashes of the Second World War to enshrine, as it were, individual values so that the war wouldn't happen again. And its great architect, of course, was Churchill, which might upset a few Brexiteers to know. And when we are not allowed to deport someone, for example, some terrorist, because of the Court of Human Rights, that's nothing to do with the EU. That is the Council of Europe back to 1950. So that will stay whether we leave or not, unless we decide that we'd rather be like some strange star in Asia and boil in oil anybody who objects. But assuming we're not quite
we can leave that. We could leave that, be theoretically an independent nation.
So now the European Court of Justice is the court that interprets specifically European law, on which there are British judges. Of course, it is in the firing line, because when somebody challenges European law, like Dyson, for example, over his vacuum cleaners, except they don't have vacuums, but his bagless cleaners, he came up against the court. He didn't like the verdict that was handed down, but it was a perfectly legal one. Nobody's claiming that it's corrupt. You know, if you don't like European legislation, try the Chinese version, you know, or the Brazilian version, or even the version of some American states.
Yeah, well, someone would argue would like the British version or English law, but you know.
Yes, but that is true within England. I mean, within the UK, only about 10% of the legislation actually is of European origin.
Now, that's a very interesting stat, because you hear from one side it's 10 or 14%, and you hear from the other side it's 60 or 70%. So,
yes, well, I derive my stat from a study that was done by the Cabinet Office over 10 years, I think from 2002 to 2012, something like that period. And in that time, they came to the conclusion that literally, I think it was something like 12% of primary legislation and about 14 or 15% of secondary legislation was EU in origin.
Okay.
And that is separate from the fact we gold plate it when we get it.
Which is what I alluded to briefly earlier. But I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? We tend to overdo the French or the Belgians. We have this myth maybe that they sort of select what they like and they adhere to what they know, what they care for, and the rest of it they give it the sort of the Gallic shrug. But I mean, is that just bizarre? You know, our own civil service has its own approach to.
I think that there are two sides here. One is that there's always this strain of barrack room lawyer in the UK that we don't always admit to, but where we almost take a masochistic pleasure in following the rules. The more they hurt, the more it is. But I think, to be quite honest, a lot of civil servants and regulators in finance particularly use the EU as a kind of shield, and they actually wanted to legislate quite heavily or regulate quite heavily, and they hid behind the EU so that they didn't catch the flak. And
well, I find it quite amusing when they're particularly talking about any potential savings in the EU. We could spend more on the National Health Service. Well, you know, we're constantly spending more on the National Health Service. It's interesting that people use that argument conveniently when they do it. So the political argument, and we've touched on it briefly, but is there any element, the rule of law and various other different aspects think that...
I think the idea that we're going to reclaim sovereignty is a myth in the sense that, yes, we might no longer be subject to European law as such, although we'll still have to comply with them if we want to export into there. But the more we do a trade deal with the United States or China or wherever, then we're going to have to comply with their laws. So we'll trade away the sovereignty in return for advantages there. So it's a transitory thing, sovereignty, in that sense. But my political point about the EU would be I actually rather like Europe. I like the values of Europe, the respect for the individual, the respect for the rule of law, although we joke about it, you know, compared to a lot of the world.
And the fact that we haven't been at war for the last...
And we haven't been at war. And I think these are great positive things, and that it's actually been a huge engine for civilized...
But no
progress.
One's arguing. On the Remain camp, it doesn't seem that anyone... Everyone's doing... No. Project Fear is probably, you know, one angle of looking at it, but it doesn't seem that anyone's any really...
I think the great tragedy of this is what is the EU going to give to us, or can we get out of it, not what can we give it to them. Mm. It reminds me of Monty Python, you know, life in Python, what did the Romans ever do for us?
Yeah.
And then when you start spelling it out, they say, oh yes, but...
Well, talking about the Judean People's Popular Front, or what it was called, but I mean, what about migration, which is the most emotive issue of the lot? This is what people think is going to be the swing issue, and so we can argue the economics and the politics one way or the other, and everyone has understandable points of view and you know, right or wrong as they may be, but migration is something which could we possibly stop migration outside of the EU? Are we really? Everyone says that we don't have any control around borders. I can't make any sense of that. Surely, as a sovereign nation outside of the EU, we could essentially do our Trump wall in Dover and stop people coming in. Or why is that not possible?
It's possible, but at what cost? You know, I mean, if you think what the queues are like at Heathrow now, imagine what they'd be like if every single person had to be vetted in detail before they came in. Or presumably you could, you know, with technology you can pre-screen them. I think the bigger issue, though, actually, is not EU migration, because most of those go back. I know quite a few people stay, but the bulk of majority, or the bulk of EU migration are young people who come for a few years and go home. And indeed, Brits who go overseas and come back, or Brits that will go to Spain and retire.
No, I mean, everyone likes the freedom of movement as a concept, but it clearly is being abused. It's not just North Africa and the Middle East, the Syrian situation. It's evident from what we saw just a couple of days ago, the people they're deporting back from Greece to Turkey. This is majority Afghani and Pakistani who are not necessarily...
But freedom of movement applies to citizens of the EU. It doesn't apply to everybody else, unless they have...
And we're not in Schengen, no, I appreciate that.
And we're not in Schengen. I think the big issue, and I agree migration is a serious problem. I think it's naive to think that it's going to go away if you leave the EU. There have been studies done on impacts of climate change and wealth and travel and so on, and they see migration as being the big issue over the next 30 years, as the people from relatively poor countries, for the first time in history, have the means to move to the wealthy countries. Yeah. A, they can see what they're like through television, and B, they have the means to get there. And so they think, well, why wouldn't I? And that is the big change over the last 20 years.
And this is something
that's not going to stop.
No, it's not going to stop. So finally, one last question. Do you think, or who do you think, which side will win? What do you think the result will be on June 23rd?
Interesting. If the vote was purely the under 40s or under 45s, then it would be 2-1 in favour of staying. I think it comes down on the day to the turnout. If it's a low turnout, I think the Brexiteers will win. If it's a high turnout, that would imply young people are voting and it'll be touch and go, but we'll stay in.
Okay, so you're marginally favour, you think that the silent majority akin to the Scottish referendum that will come out you think will probably...
My fear is they might not come out, and I do think...
So it's the youth vote.
I do think that the...
It's down to Jeremy Corbyn, really, and perhaps possibly, and the Labour Party to... and the Liberal Democrats to...
I think that the main camp, the in camp, have been lamentable at presenting a positive vision of the future, as opposed to a fear thing.
No, I think you're very right.
And I do worry about the outcome. I think it's quite conceivable we would come out, and then, be careful what you wish for.
Excellent. Well, Anthony Horton, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.